Richard, thank you very much indeed. Now, we remember today the sacrifice and bravery of many men and women throughout the Commonwealth who gave their lives in the service of our nation. Some who carried out their duties in a particular heroic way were awarded this medal, the Victoria Cross, the highest award for bravery that any serviceman, whatever their rank, can receive. But there is another cross that is also associated with war and conflict, and it's this one, the Red Cross, an international society established in 1863 to care for those injured in battle, irrespective of race or creed. Now, why has the cross become the symbol of both supreme bravery and supreme compassion? And actually, the answer is because of that reading we've just heard, actually, which refers to it, is because of the sacrificial death of Jesus upon the cross. In fact, as we've just heard in that reading, do you keep a glance at it? Jesus himself refers to his forthcoming death on the cross as an example and inspiration of a sort of sacrificial service which his followers are to copy. That final verse, a few verses, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man, that's a reference to himself, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. But why all this focus on the death of this one man that we have crosses? It's the medal for bravery is in the shape of a cross, and also the Red Cross as a sign of compassion. Why has it proved such an inspiration? One of the experiments that NASA carried out in its first orbiting space laboratory called Skylab involved positioning one of the astronauts so that he was floating in zero gravity but not moving. He was lying horizontally, and when he kind of stretched himself out, he was kind of a good couple of feet, about a metre, from the wall of Skylab. And then he was commanded to move himself to the wall. And as the camera recorded, he twisted, he rolled, he did somersaults and swam with kind of absolute liberty, floating freely in space. But when he stopped and stretched himself out horizontally again, he was exactly where he was before, 1 meter from the wall. No matter how often and hard he tried, he couldn't move himself. Why? Because he was held down by his own center of gravity. He could spin around his centre of gravity, but he could not move it. And had he been left there, and nobody kept his aid, he would have died. He was helpless. Decayed. Still with his arms outstretched, still 1 metre from the wall. Now, we too, human beings, appear to have almost absolute freedom of choice. We can choose what to have for breakfast, what film we want to go and see, what music we want to listen to. And we're going to go on holiday, if we've got the money. We can do that. But the tragedy is that when it comes to our moral life, we human beings are in terrible captivity to our self-centered natures. My desires, my will, my rights. That's actually what the Bible means when it talks about sin. It's not just kind of doing, saying, or thinking evil things. But it's that overriding desire I have to live my own life, my own way, and ignore God's right as my maker, to govern and direct my life his way. And of course, when you've got 7 billion people all doing that, divided into different nations, no wonder we have wars. 7 billion people all acting and living as if they were God. And what makes the situation even worse, actually, is that sin results in God's punishment. It must, because God, he's not like a weak schoolmaster, teacher, or a or a corrupt judge who sees something wrong and actually does nothing about it. Now, as the righteous and holy Lord of the universe, he can't pretend that our rebellion and disobedience, actually, that the misery and evil caused by human beings, like war in the world, hasn't happened or doesn't offend him. See, all sin must be dealt with and punished, and that includes actually the sin of each one of us. My sin, your sin. We are actually helpless like that astronaut in Skylab. We can do nothing to get ourselves out of this appalling situation. And unless somehow we can be rescued from this plight, we too will die and be cut off from our Creator forever. But the wonderful news of the Christian message is that God in his love has provided a way for us that we can escape the hopeless situation we're all in. And our verse talks about it. That last verse, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. In a ransom, a price is paid so that somebody who is captive can be set free. And what Jesus says he came into the world to do is to set us free. Jesus came from God not just to show us how to live, although he does do that, nor just to show us what God is like, though he does. Nay, he came to earth to die. We're all born to live, aren't we? To have our life. It's great to see all the cadets here with our lives in front of them. Hope you'll make the most of your life and use it for good. We're born to live, to have life. He was born to die. Jesus' death is the ransom price through which you and I can be set free from this dreadful captivity to sin and God's judgment. But how does it work? How does Jesus dying on the cross set me free? It's because on the cross, Jesus swapped places with us. In one of the regiments of the British Army, the British Empire in India, at the time of the Indian Mutiny, there was a bugler boy. He's a frail lad of about 14 years old. Since his parents had died, the regiment had become his home. The boy was a Christian, and though often ridiculed by some of the hard men, he had an enormous influence for good. One night, when his regiment was on exercise, the practice targets were vandalized, so that the exercise had to be postponed for a number of days. The general in charge of the exercise ordered an investigation, and they traced the culprits to one particular tent in which this young lad was billeted with a number of the roughest men in the regiment. It was very clear that somebody in that tent was guilty, and so a court-martial was convened. The colonel in charge of the court-martial said, "Look, we know that this squad contains the guilty man. And if the guilty one will step out like a man and take the 10 strokes of the cat, the rest will go free." That cat wasn't some poor little moggy. No, it was a whip, the cat of nine tails, which would shred somebody's back to pieces. Of course, if nobody stepped forward, they'd all have to be whipped. And as he was waiting, the bugler boy, who was called Willie Holt, stepped out. "Colonel," he said, "you have given your word that if any man of this squad will step out and take the 10 strokes of the cat, the rest will go free. I take you at your word, I will take the 10 strokes of the cat." And the colonel hesitated, knowing that the boy was not guilty, and he urged the guilty ones to step forward. There was still no response, and the boy said quietly, "Colonel, your word has been given." So sick at heart, the colonel gave the order for the boy to be tied up. He was bared to the waist, and the strokes came down. 1, 2, 3. As the fourth stroke came down on that back, just a moan burst from the boy's lips. Just then, a hard nut called Jim Skies bounded out. "Stop, Colonel! I should be there. That boy's not guilty. I am. Tie me up. Let me take the stroke." And the boy with his white tense face smiled and said, "No, Jim. The colonel's word is given. I have taken the punishment. You are free." And then he fainted. And actually, a few days later, he died. And that's what happened when Jesus died on the cross. He was receiving from God, his heavenly Father, the punishment we deserved so that we might not have to face the punishment ourselves. Jesus says to us from the cross, "I have borne the punishment so that you may be free." See, just as the innocent Willie Holt swapped places with the guilty Jim Skies, so the sinless Jesus swapped place with the sinful humanity. Just as Willie Holt received the lashes of the court-martial and thereby satisfied military justice, so Jesus on the cross received the lashes of God's punishment against our sin and thereby satisfied God's justice. We're amazed at the true story of what Willie Holt did, aren't we? It's a very moving. But Willie Holt simply paid the penalty of one sin for one man. Jesus, the eternal sinless Son of God, paid a sufficient penalty for all the sins of all people, of all times, therefore for all of us. He needn't have done it. He needn't have died on the cross. He could have stayed in heaven with his heavenly Father and let us suffer the punishment we deserve. But God sent his eternal Son into the world, and Jesus willingly went to die on the cross out of love for you and me. Remember that verse? "For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." On this day, we rightly have become before God to commemorate those who gave their life for our nation, and to thank God for the freedoms we enjoy in this country because of their sacrifice. It would be a dreadful thing to ignore or despise the supreme sacrifice that servicemen and women throughout the Commonwealth have made so that we can live in freedom and peace, a freedom and peace which we enjoy now. It would be appalling not to remember that. But would it not be a greater tragedy and a greater offense to God if we human beings ignore or despise the great ransom that Jesus Christ paid on our behalf as he died on the cross so that we could know God's forgiveness?